I'm Greg Johnson.
And I'm Frody.
Welcome to Countercurrents Radio. We are back with our weekly podcast, and today we're going to talk about SASgate. SASgate is the hashtag for this outrageous commercial by SAS, which is a Scandinavian air carrier, which basically declares that what it means to be Scandinavian, what's essentially Scandinavian, is absolutely nothing. And this outraged people all over the world. It blew up on Twitter. You were up into the wee hours of the morning following this when it happened. So, Frody, can you give us some background on this? And then we're going to talk about the reactions to it and how the airline has countered it and the general discussion that's going on. I think overall this is a very good sign. I think this is an example of identitarian internet pushing back, kicking these people in the ass. So can you give us sort of an account of this from the very beginning?
Right. I think it was Tuesday when I read in the alternative media in Swedish about this commercial, this ad campaign by SAS, Scandinavian Airlines, which is probably the biggest airline in Scandinavia. And they also fly, you know, outside of Scandinavia, but Scandinavians use it a lot. I think they probably compete with Norwegian, which is another airline. They released this video. They start by asking the question, what is truly Scandinavian? And then they answer, absolutely nothing. And then they just go through a lot of examples of things that are assumed to be Scandinavian, according to the narrative in the film, at least. And then they dismiss those things as not Scandinavian at all. For example, the meatballs or, I don't know, all kinds of different things. And this caused some outrage among the viewers. It had, you know, immediately got hundreds of downvotes and thousands of downvotes, and people were upset about this attack on Scandinavian identity. After some 13,000 downvotes on Tuesday evening, they took down the video. And as if that weren't enough, you know, they could have stopped there and, you know, just admitted to themselves that this was an unsuccessful ad campaign, that they'd made a mistake and apologized or something, or just moved on. But then they put the ad up again, and now the narrative that has been pushed is that this is somehow, the negative reactions are somehow caused by Putin. These are Russian bots. So they humiliated themselves even more by, you know, not just owning up to their mistake, but just blaming it on Russia and blaming it on the boogie, you know?
Right.
Boogeyman.
Yeah, this is hilarious stuff. I mean, the next time Bart Simpson does something wrong, he's just going to blame it on Putin. It's become a total joke. So yeah, they've been claiming that this is Russian bots. I know some of the people who got this thing blown up on Twitter, and none of them are Russian, and none of them are bots. Mm-hmm. So this is just an obvious attempt to save face somehow, and the fact that they're trying to save face by blaming it on the Russians is just so comical because, well, it seems like an act of desperation, basically.
As soon as someone doesn't agree with SJW politically correct narrative, it's Russia's fault. I even remember one time, I've said this several times, I've repeated this story several times, but I even read by, you know, even intellectuals in Sweden, that during riots, immigrant riots in the suburbs of Malmö and Stockholm, they have said that it's Russian agents who have caused these things to make Sweden look bad. Because, of course, these things can never happen, never really happen. You know, mass immigration never has real bad consequences. So it's always someone else's fault. And I think we're now at, last I checked, we were at like 60,000 downvotes, and people have started campaigns to boycott this airline, and their competitor, Norwegian, posted something with, there's a very specific Norwegian cheese cutter that is sort of an icon. So they did that as a joke after this SAS campaign. So this Norwegian airline, they said that luckily no one can take the cheese cutter from us.
Well, it's funny that they should do that, that they should make a joke out of it, but they shouldn't make a joke out of it, because there are a lot of great things about Norway. Edvard Grieg, Ibsen, Munch,
right.
Knut Hamsun. There are a lot of Norwegians and Norwegian achievements, exploration, invention, etc., that Norwegians can be very proud of. The mm-hmm. thing that was so offensive about this was this SAS ad was basically like all forms of multiculturalism. It's an attempt to define the society that they've got under the magnifying glass that's in their sights, that they're attacking. It's an attempt to define it as intrinsically nothing, mm-hmm. as merely openness to the outside, as mm-hmm. if anything can be by nature open to the outside. And the reason they do this, of course, is because if you get people to define themselves as interchangeable, replaceable, dispensable, then they can be dispensed with. They can be replaced. They can be interchanged with aliens, which is the agenda. The agenda is to replace Scandinavians. So we learned, for instance, that the meatball, which comes from outside Scandinavia, can't be Swedish. But we also learned that black people can be Swedish.
This is the quote that is in SVT, which is the Swedish television stately owned news. So the SAS comments to the news that they suspect that their ad campaign has been hijacked. When we saw this extraordinary traffic to our YouTube channel and our Facebook page, we suspected an attack, like an IT attack.
Which says one thing, first of all, that they have no traffic to these things normally.
Right. Yeah, because, you know, this is in response to the fact that they took the video down from the platform, from YouTube. So they put it in private mode so you know, the public couldn't see it. And when they were asked why, well, it's because our ad campaign was hijacked. So this is some sort of, IT attack against the company. They still say that they can stand behind the message, so that's why they put the ad up again.
Right.
But it is like you said, yeah, we're not allowed to exist. And there has been a storm of memes coming out of this, especially making fun of that, you know, the meatballs, Swedish meatballs aren't Swedish, but Africans are Swedish.
Yeah, exactly. The agenda is so transparent at this point. Another thing is they only pick things that they can plausibly claim came from somewhere else. The idea that there could be anything that's indigenous to Sweden, that has to be erased. Because if something's indigenous to Sweden, unless it's some kind of alien people, right?
Right.
If there were brown people who were indigenous to Sweden, you'd never hear the end of it. But anything European that's indigenous to Sweden or to France or to any other white country has to be erased from history. Why? Because indigenous rights. That's part of the whole notion of a national identity. The stuff that's autochthonous, that belongs there, that's always been there, that has to be erased. So yeah, they say meatballs came from somewhere else. Well, let's talk about things that aren't borrowed by the Swedes. There are plenty
right.
of things that haven't been borrowed by the Swedes that came from Sweden. For instance, I've seen a picture of the periodic table of elements where right. all the different elements are represented by national flags, the national flags of the people who first isolated those elements. Mm-hmm. A lot of Swedish scientists are represented there. Sweden
yeah.
is overrepresented.
Sweden is on the second place right after Britain, and Britain has a much larger population. So probably Sweden is in the first place per capita.
Right.
Of those inventions. Obviously, yeah, inventions, all kinds of things, and explorers, like you said, we have Sven Hedin from Sweden, we have Amundsen, we have Tor Heyerdahl from Norway, people who have done great things that have gone down through history, and Alfred Nobel, the Nobel Prize is named after, he invented dynamite, There's plenty of progress that has come from Sweden and Norway and Denmark. Denmark has Kierkegaard. And of course, the lifestyles in those countries are the most prominent thing, because that is why so many people want to go there. Right. That is why these people who hate white people, they say, you know, they want to stay close to white people, but then white people are not allowed to exist.
Yeah.
Scandinavians aren't allowed to exist, but everyone wants to live among Scandinavians because apparently these horrible people are very pleasant to live amongst.
Right. Exactly. It's so contradictory. And another thing that we really should say is that even the sorriest bunch of losers on the planet deserve a homeland of their own. Mm-hmm. Even if you couldn't point to a single Swedish philosopher, inventor, composer, a single Swede who's made an impact on the world as a whole, doesn't mean that Sweden needs to be erased from the pages of history, because the purpose of a country is not its gifts to global high culture or global commerce. The purpose of a country is to be a homeland for the people who actually live there. And they don't exactly have to be the most distinguished people in the world. They can be the most ordinary people in the world. Everybody has a right to a home, and that's what's targeted here. That's what's targeted for erasure.
Right. Yeah, that's the silly thing, you know, that you try to sort of describe your interests from an objective viewpoint, but by their very nature, ethnic interests aren't objective. They are subjective because different people have different interests. we want to look out for our group because it's our group. Yeah. And we want to live. Animals that have a survival instinct, they don't question the fact that they have an interest in staying alive and keeping their offspring alive. But apparently very highbrow people, they have to find some sort of weird philosophical justification for being allowed to live. And, you know, it's like the vitalist sort of philosophy of Nietzsche when he criticized when you start asking these questions is sort of a symptom of a disease, of a moral disease in the organism, because a healthy organism doesn't even ask those questions if they're allowed to exist.
Exactly. Yeah, it's morbid. It's simply morbid to raise questions like that. Mm-hmm. It's a symptom of depression. Mm-hmm. It's akin to what they call suicidal ideation, which is one of the symptoms of severe depression.
Right.
The reaction to this was very heartening. Now, of course, I saw people on the right on Twitter reacting to it. And mm-hmm. suddenly I was deluged with memes and things like that that were quite entertaining.
Right.
But the number of downvotes on social media and so forth, I thought that was rather inspiring. And my sense is this. This was mm-hmm. not just right-wing social media that was responding to this. This was a broader thing than that. It was lots of normies who were getting this bounced around to their accounts, and they were outraged by it, and they were downvoting it.
Yes.
And this was a populist uprising, populist pushback. And of course, what they want to do is they want to stigmatize that and say that it isn't real. It's engineered by hateful people who quote unquote hijacked their campaign. Mm-hmm. And now they're claiming it's engineered by Russian bots, which I think is totally absurd. They claim that because some of these accounts are linked with right-wing trolling, that it's not legitimate. But let me tell you, right-wing populism rules entire countries now. It's legitimate. The stories that these people tell themselves, they're so entitled and so arrogant. When right-wing candidates win, or when Brexit won, their attitude is, well, there's a problem here. We need to make sure these votes don't count, because these votes go against our narrative. They don't count.
Right. Yeah, they're anti-democratic.
Yeah.
Definitely.
This is democracy in action. This is a populist pushback, and it's a quite remarkable one. It's very, very quick. It's very spontaneous. We can't engineer these sorts of things. That's one of the things that I've learned by being involved with this movement for a long time. Try as you might to get something going viral, I've never known anyone who can engineer that. It has to be spontaneous. And when enough people see this and react in the same way, that's not because it's some top-down thing. It's because the culture is permeating with our ideas, and so a lot of people see these things, and they react the same way, and they act on it. They don't just get mad. They act on it. They share it. They downvote it. They create memes. They mock it. And they get this campaign going. And, of course, the establishment wants to denigrate that because they're afraid of it. Because we're talking back to them, and we're not supposed to talk back.
Right. Yes, it's like both when the Brexit vote was, when the Brexit, the Leave side won against the will of the mass media, and when Donald Trump was elected against the will of the mass media, it was treated as some sort of glitch in the system. It was treated like some sort of mistake, and it was never taken seriously as this is actually the will of the people. They always try to sort of sweep it under the rug somehow, that this isn't an actual reaction against the current policies. And it's the same thing with this. Blame it on Putin. It's such a cliche that it's embarrassing. And of course, this is a reaction. And in a way, white people, Scandinavians, maybe especially and famously so, have been pushed around by the politically correct class and by immigrants themselves, immigrant gangs, and harassed, and the amount of lethal shootings in Sweden every year, where people get shot, gunned down in the street and in the big cities in Sweden, isn't a thing that used to be normal like 20 years, 30 years ago. These are things that Swedes have started to have in their everyday lives, and there's very little they can do about it, the common man, so to speak, so that when an opportunity like this arises, when you can safely protest the defamation and denigration and abuse of your people, then of course a lot of people are willing to take it because they can do it anonymously and they can do it, they are a part of a bigger crowd of people. It's like, Gustave Le Bon's book, The Crowd, that, when people have the safety in numbers where they're just a part of a crowd, then they suddenly have a lot more courage.
Yeah.
Than they had before, and then now they can speak up. So I wish people could do this on when it really matters, rather than I love that they've done this, but this is an ad campaign. People should have the guts to stand up to this abuse in other situations as well.
Not just on the symbolic level, but yeah, exactly. It's easy to do it in this case, and a lot of people have done it, mm-hmm. and they recognize that these symbols are loaded, and they're loaded against them. This is a gun pointed at the head of Scandinavians, real Scandinavians. And they're mm-hmm. reacting to this. And one hopes that this is going to snowball into more political action, more politically effective action. But I do think that, like I said, the reason why so many people saw this as a bad thing and reacted in the same way is that people's minds have been permeated now with our message to such an extent that this is the sort of spontaneous thing that will happen. Now, the people who are claiming that this is engineered by people outside Scandinavia, it's a cop-out.
They don't need Putin's help to look bad. I mean, that's
no,
for certain.
Exactly. Yeah. But it tips their hand about how they think culture really works, and it tips their hand about what they're doing. Their idea is to engineer culture from the top down, from the center outward to the margins, to engage in propaganda, to engineer people's reactions. And therefore, when they see something that pushes back against them, the automatic assumption is it's something like what they're doing, right? That it's not real populism. It's just social engineering of a different kind, from a different camp.
It's interesting these people, they believe in the will of the people, but when they actually see the will of the people, that's not the will of the elites, then they reject it.
What your will is.
Yes.
Well, that's their attitude. They'll tell the people what their will is, and God help them if they talk back.
Yeah, it's extremely arrogant.
Yeah.
It's extremely arrogant, and it's part of a wider pattern. for a long time, it's been fashionable in the Swedish education system to sort of downplay Sweden's role in history. Usually a normal country will have, when children are taught history in school, they will have that history, you know, that will be focused around their country, of course, from within. But now it's more fashionable to just take a wider view of history. So Sweden is just a part of the world history. So it's not the history of our country and our achievements. The teachers routinely mock the sort of old, stuffy, old-fashioned, boring history of kings and wars and learning different years by heart and so on. You know, so that routinely Swedish schools for decades now have tried to purge everything from the Swedish curriculum that can give the population any pride in its history, so that Swedish students know nothing about their own history or the achievements of different kings. You can basically become a PhD in literature in Sweden without reading a page of Strindberg, for example. I mean, usually the Norwegians are slightly better at this because everyone in Norway has read something by Knut Hamsun or some other famous Norwegian author. But there is really, Swedes have made a conscious effort to become rootless. The rulers of Sweden have really sort of purged everything that can cause a sense of belonging. They've purged that out of the curriculum. So that is why I think they are surprised when a campaign like this backfires, because that is what they have been telling the population of Sweden for decades, that, you know, that they have deprived them of everything that they can take pride in. There is so much that Swedes can take pride in, and Scandinavians in general can take pride in terms of authors and artists, painters, musicians, and inventors, and conquerors, explorers, engineers, things like that. Just the people who have developed many of the things we take for granted in the modern world. But Swedes are, to a large extent, very unconscious of this. And I think that is why they expected this campaign to just be accepted, because this is the general narrative. I mean, this isn't against the general narrative in Sweden.
One thing you told me about I thought was very interesting, that in Sweden, people have a negative attitude towards King Charles the 12th, whereas Russians have a very positive attitude towards King Charles the 12th. Do you want to talk about that a little? I thought that was very revealing, actually.
Yes. So Charles the 12th, I'm going to get attacked in the street by some like history buff from Sweden, because I can't give all the details. He was a king who lived in the early 1700s, when Sweden was a superpower, and I think he left his home in Stockholm when he was 17 years old, and he was out waging war the rest of his life, and he was killed in his mid-30s. He was killed in Norway. And he was known to be a brilliant military genius, a brilliant military mastermind, a strategic mastermind. There are so many stories about how heroic he was and so on, and he was really a leader in battle. There's one story that he fell off a horse. He fell off his horse and broke his leg. But then he had his men, carry him on a stretcher in front of the rest of the troops, because he refused to be behind his troops in battle. He always wanted to be, you know, on the front lines. He was well known. And he, since then, I think Voltaire, who was contemporary with him, he wrote in a biography, he wrote that Charles the 12th of Sweden is the only man in history who lacks all weakness. He has no weaknesses. I mean, that is the kind of person that really sort of reverberated through history. And I think the German, the SS, in their educational literature, they had two major heroes that they looked up to, and they were Frederick II of Prussia and Charles the 12th of Sweden. This is a guy on the level of Napoleon or Julius Caesar. And nowadays, it's of course very fashionable among Swedish quote-unquote intellectuals to mock him. They say that because he didn't have he didn't take interest in women, he was obviously gay. I mean, this guy was just only interested in war. Mm-hmm. That was his only interest in life. That was war. So yeah, he wasn't a ladies' man. So therefore he must have been gay. So there are these weird, you know, leftist academics. The major project of leftist academics is to take everything heroic and try to mock it. Because these are people, these are very small people, leftist intellectuals. They're very small people with you know, very small souls who want to mock everything that's greater than themselves. Because right. Nothing great is allowed to exist.
Right. You know, we'll come back to Charles XII in a second. But just apropos of that point, I remember, and this is standard now. There's so many documentaries and articles about this, where people will talk about the Vikings and they will say, the purpose of the Viking voyages was to extend trade and things like that. And they try and make it as bourgeois as possible.
Oh,
basically.
Yes.
It's all about commerce. It's not about adventure. It's not about exploration. There's nothing heroic. There's nothing masculine about it. It's just about trade. They wanted spice for their lutefisk or whatever, and it's an attempt to make it banal and
yeah.
bourgeois.
Oh yes, there's also a story by Nicholas Wade, you know, the guy who wrote this book on race a few years back. He's one of the very few mainstream writers who write sensible things about the human biodiversity. He wrote a book called Before the Dawn about the genetic history of humans, and he made fun of Marxist historians who, you know, Ötzi, the Ice Age man,
yeah,
who they found very well preserved. In his belongings, he had axe heads. And Marxist historians dismissed this. I mean, these were obviously made for war, for fighting. And Marxist historians, they just dismissed this as, these were like valuable things that he carried for trade. Because violence is something that was invented by the bourgeoisie later or something like that. You know, I don't know. I don't know what Marxist historians believe. But yeah, that's how they try to twist history. But anyhow, Swedish historians now mock Charles XII. Swedish school children definitely, well, if they hear anything of him, they will hear some sort of, you know, how he supported multiculturalism or something. You know, they'll just hear some extremely trivial anecdote. But they will hear nothing of his greatness or what he actually accomplished or you know, in what to what extent he was a military genius and, you know, a person that the rest of Europe looked up to. Very unlike the leaders today, like Stefan Löfven and the current king of Sweden.
Right, whereas Charles XII beat the Russians in battle.
Yeah.
And you were saying that Russians know about Charles XII more than Swedes do and look up to him, even though he was an enemy, even though he was an enemy who humiliated them in battle. I thought that was remarkable, actually.
Yes, because there was a film, maybe 10 years ago now, maybe a bit more than 10 years, a Russian film about the conflict between Sweden and Russia back then. And they portray Charles XII and those warriors in a very favorable light, although they were on the opposite side and they were deadly enemies back then, because they have a different view on violence. They have a different view on heroism and masculinity. They don't see masculinity and heroism as something to be mocked, like the sort of metrosexual, sort of limp-wristed leftist academics do in the West. They see it as something to look up to. And it reminds me of, you know, one of these speeches by Jonathan Bowden, where he talks about Conan battling one of his enemies. And Conan says that, you know, I will have my women sing songs of heroism about your bravery, something like that, you know, about the enemy that he's fighting, because he respects the enemy because he put up a good fight. Mm-hmm. That is a mentality you won't really see today.
No.
So, yeah, Sweden has this this extreme form of ethnomasochism that I very rarely see. So I was actually very surprised to see such a wide and popular sort of uprising against this video.
So I was told just today that a bomb threat has come in against SAS. Now, there are two possible explanations for this. One is that there really was a bomb threat against SAS, and the other is...
It's against the ad firm, just should add.
Oh, yes. Against the ad firm. Yes. You know, or it's them trying to make themselves out as victims. I guess we just have to say that this is interesting, and it might actually even have happened. But clearly, if it did happen, it's a sign that people really are getting fed up again with this kind of stuff. Interestingly, I looked at the ad firm and the people who worked on the particular video, and the names didn't seem to echo at all, which I thought was kind of fascinating.
Right. Yes, I mean, Swedes and Scandinavians and the Danes and the Norwegians don't really need echoes to tell them to hate themselves, because there is something in there's an idea, the ruling ideology, the sort of very sort of broad stroke social democratic ruling ideology that has been ruling Scandinavia for most part of the last, well, more than 100 years. There's some self-hatred there. And probably it's even older. You know, Kevin McDonald brings up this very famous thing in Sweden that is called Janteloven, which is that the Jante law, and it's a fictional law, but it's recognized as very stereotypical of Scandinavian mentality, which is that don't think that you're anything important, don't think that you're better than us. It's a very sort of stay in the middle of the road. You're not allowed to leave the fold, so to speak. You have to just stay in the group and not think that you're special. And this is a very sort of, in the negative sense, socialistic mentality that has been around in Scandinavia for a very long time. So that, you know, no one is allowed to get too big. You're not allowed to brag. There's often like a very, Scandinavians often talk about Americans in those terms as well. They like, you know, big cars. They like to brag. You have to downplay everything that's great about you in Scandinavia, and it sometimes comes across as very insincere. I mean, it's some sort of passive aggressive behavior, but it's a very unpleasant part of Scandinavian mentality, I would say. Mm-hmm. This stuff. So it isn't all echoes, I'm sorry to say. It is something very sort of masochistic that is in us, that has probably been very adaptive in some sense, you know, back through history in ice ages, maybe, as Kevin McDonald suggests, but has become disastrous when we are up against other groups in you know, evolutionary competition.
Yeah. And I think that there's a lot of truth to that. Anyway, it was a white pill for me to see this pushback.
Right.
We need little things like this to keep momentum going, to keep morale up, and so forth. And I really hope that some of the people at SAS and some of the people at this ad firm are kind of burned by this, are feeling discomforted by this, are feeling the pushback. Mm-hmm. A lot of these people, these leftist types, they're very neurotic. They're kind of fragile, neurotic people. You know, they're constantly tweeting about their mental illnesses, things like that. Yeah. SJW types are like that. And it would be nice if this rattled them a bit. There might be less of this, and I would love it. I would love it if Norwegian would push this as just a way of competing with them, because Norwegian, as an airline, hasn't just, you know, claimed the cheese cutter. They also claim famous Norwegians and put portraits of them on the tail, paint them on their planes and things like that, which I thought was kind of a nice thing. It's not unhealthy. It's no. not chauvinistic. It's not bigoted. It's not mean to, if you're an airline named after your home nation, to feature the home team. There's nothing wrong with that at all. That's a healthy thing. And it should be the norm. One of the things I liked about Norwegian, I fly Norwegian, you know, frequently, is it's a very white experience. The one time I flew transatlantic on Norwegian and they had some people who were working in the crew, stewards who were, I think they were from Thailand or someplace like that. But generally, you know, when you look at the safety videos, when you look at the advertising, it's mostly Norwegians or Norwegian looking people. They pass for Norwegian. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. In fact, I think that if somebody is flying Norwegian who's from Thailand, they would rather have it to be a Norwegian experience rather than a multicultural experience.
Right. Yes. And one of the major sources to Jewish power is that whenever you offend Jewish sensibilities or rights, if they just perceive that you offend their rights, there will be every single time, reliably, massive protests. They will write letters, protest. They will make it difficult for the people who offended their rights. They have lawyers who will go after you. They will report it to the police. And that is one of the major sources, because every time people, this is learned behavior. You learn that if you offend this group, there will be consequences. Therefore, don't offend this group. But this group, it's open season on this group. You can just do anything you like. You can invade their territory. You can rape their women. You can even kill them. I mean, children are being raped in, you know, I wouldn't say funny, but you know, it is funny in a way. It's crazy that all the while, even children are being raped in the schoolyard in Sweden. If we say something, if a person or a celebrity or someone uses an insensitive word against other races, that becomes headline news everywhere. Right. Whereas if our people are killed, physically brutalized, that is nothing. That is worth nothing. And that is a result of the fact that when people violate our interests, they will have no consequences. So I think that if we can actually start reporting things to the police every time something happens. And people always, you know, they always try to mind read and think that, oh, will this go somewhere or not? Just the fact that you get a letter from the police saying that this person has reported you for this crime, this investigation is going on, even if that person isn't convicted, if that happens a couple of times, it's uncomfortable. It isn't nice to get a letter from the police, you know, saying that we're looking into this case against you or whatever. And the same thing with, you know, getting letters, getting protests. These things are actually effective. So if we actually have, if we build the capacity to start campaigns against companies, boycott campaigns, anything like that, that is very effective. And if we start, you know, these mass campaigns of writing letters, these petitions, all kinds of things, those things will accumulate effect over time. And if we get in the habit of doing that, I think we're well on the way to you know, changing the cultural climate.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The reaction to the Gillette toxic masculinity razor ads was a similar populist pushback. And I believe that a quarter or two later, Gillette posted that they had lost enormous amounts of money. And it was pushback. It was not an official boycott, but it was a boycott, basically. People were so disgusted with a razor company giving us messages about toxic masculinity that they stopped buying their products. And I think that that's a very, very reasonable thing to do. It would be nice, though, if they didn't have to wait 6 months and to realize that they have made a terrible mistake. It would be nice if there was a template for a boycott that would give voice to this kind of protest and focus this protest and let them know what's coming, right? So they can stop it, so that they don't double down on it, so that they maybe apologize. Wouldn't it be nice to get an apology out of these people?
That's what we should demand. I mean, that's what I mean. That's what I mean, that Jews are powerful to a large extent. They are powerful to a large extent, not only because they have a high average IQ and all kinds of things like that. They are powerful because they are hypersensitive. And when something happens that they don't like, they will overreact. They will blow up. They will really, they will go crazy and go after the person who, or whatever, who said something that offended them.
Right.
And we have to learn from that. We also have to, quote unquote, overreact. Well, it isn't overreaction if it actually gets the result we need. We have to stop this cultural acceptance of attacking and dispossessing white people. We just have to stop it. We have to stop being so fucking large about it.
Yeah.
We have to stop. We have to stop being sort of pathologically altruistic.
Yeah, we have this sense of high-mindedness that doesn't work anymore. That doesn't work for us. We have to be a bit small about this kind of stuff.
It only works when you have reciprocity, right?
Right.
The other groups don't give it back to us, so we have to start acting smart.
Yeah. Either we don't interact with them at all, which would be ultimately the best situation, or we interact with them on a level that does not systematically disadvantage us, and that means that we stop being quote-unquote big and taking shit from these other people. We demand reciprocity. If we are going to respect them, they have to start respecting us.
Yeah.
And they get nothing from us if they don't respect us. That's the way this has to go from now on. Them's the rules from now on. Anything else is slow motion suicide. It's just cuckering yourself to death.
Yeah.
And we've got to call a screaming halt to it. It would be nice, and I think this will happen, it would be nice to have the infrastructure in place, the authorities, the people who can lead a charge, lead a boycott, and magnify this populist outrage into something really effective. Because the victory is when they're afraid to do this. We will never live in a world free of leftists. You know, every generation, there are always going to be freakish, deformed people, mentally speaking, who are born, who are going to think this way and act this way. You can't eliminate them completely from the gene pool, right?
Spiteful mutants.
Yeah, spiteful mutants are always going to come up. The best case scenario is that they live in a culture that's immune to the kind of bullshit that these people are peddling and basically using to drive our societies into ruin. So they have to live in a culture where they know that this isn't going to fly, that they're intimidated, basically, from doing this kind of stuff, that it gets them nowhere, except maybe in the madhouse or something like that. So, we want to get to the point where these people are simply intimidated into never opening their mouths with this kind of evil, destructive nonsense.
Yeah.
But We're far from that yet, and at least we can start by making them suffer real world consequences. And by that I mean nothing illegal, not actually bombing these places and things like that. This has to be civil, but it has to be firm, and it has to be uncompromising. This will not fly. SAS will not fly. this kind of stuff will not fly. One of the commenters on Countercurrents said, why trust your life to a bunch of delusional, hateful fantasists, which is what this advertising campaign reveals.
Yeah.
The people who created this are hateful, delusional fantasists. Do you want to trust your life to hateful, delusional fantasists? I remember years ago, my heart sinking when Delta Airlines was talking about their great push to have black female pilots. And it's like, holy cow, do I really want to trust my life to affirmative action airline pilots? Enough is enough, for God's sake. You know, you can fill up these useless offices, these PR and human relationships, human relations offices, human resources offices, things like that, with affirmative action people. That's what they do generally. They create whole departments where they can stick these people. where they do for no statistics. Real harm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Putting them in the cockpit, putting them in the air traffic control tower, that's taking this shit too far.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the next step of everything that has to do with nationalism. Because stoicism, the time of stoicism is over.
Yes.
Stoicism means suicide and ethnocide and genocide. If we are just stoical about people attacking us and basically wanting us dead, then we are going to end up dead. So what we need to do is we need to do as the Jews have done. We need to do as the feminists. I mean, just consider that when there's a red light and a green light, when you cross the street, at least in Scandinavia, there's a picture of a man, you know, I don't know if it, is it the same in America?
You have like a picture of a man.
Yeah. And that is unacceptable to the feminists. They react on stupid shit like that. And it's the same thing with the instruction manual from IKEA, you know, oh, it's a man putting the furniture together. That's unacceptable. They have people who are policing the slightest thing that happens that they don't like. And even things that doesn't really offend them, just to keep the public on their toes. And so they have created a huge cultural power to themselves, because no one even dares to say anything that can be interpreted as offending, you know, the principles of feminism or offending Jews. So we need groups that are not only reacting when something very bad happens, we need groups that are monitoring everything that happens. And as soon as anyone does anything that can be interpreted, even loosely, as violating and or offending us, we need to bring attention to that and put pressure where that is. And by that, I mean, of course, legal means. I mean, legal teams, I mean, ad campaigns, boycott campaigns. Just bring unwanted attention to those things that violate our interests. And that will create a learned behavior that when you attack us, that has consequences.
Right. And it also creates a learned behavior on the part of our people, because success breeds success. And if we start beating these people back in one area, we're going to want to do it in another area and another area and another. It would be so nice if the right had a feeling of moving from success to success rather than just failing and retreating, which is really what the mainstream right does. They complain, they put up a show, then they collapse, and then they write the conservative case for forced transsexualism or whatever. That's next, right? The conservative case for preteen transsexuals. They're useless. They're totally useless. Wouldn't it be nice if we had a right that goes from victory to victory and where it snowballs and gets bigger and bigger and bigger? There's this parody of those motivational posters. There was a website, I don't know if it still exists, called Demotivators. And it just parodies this kind of corporate uplift speak. And my favorite one is, a few harmless flakes can come together to create an avalanche of destruction. And it's a snowball going down the side of a hill. Right? A few harmless flakes can come together to create an avalanche of destruction. And that, in a way, it's kind of a self-depreciating way of describing identitarians. A few harmless flakes, that's what we start out as, right? A few harmless flakes, if they can stick together and they can get some momentum and start adding more and more flakes to them, can be an avalanche, a real force of destruction. And that's what I want our movement to be. We might start out as a few harmless flakes, but we will be an avalanche of destruction that sweeps away all this kind of cultural Marxist garbage, which is really out to destroy us. Again, yes. Principles matter. That's why the left fights over principles. Symbols matter. That's why they try to control symbols. This ad campaign, which some people would say, oh, it's just an ad campaign, it's just a feel-good ad campaign, this establishes the principle that what it is to be Scandinavian is nothing at all.
Mm. It has genocidal intentions.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You have to see the genocide in this harmless, high-minded crap that some people just want to dismiss. This is genocidal. If you define a people as nothing, that is a prelude to annihilating them, to making nothing out of them and replacing them. That's the reason why they do this.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And we have to react accordingly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. If a person pulls out a gun and points it at a loved one, you react appropriately, I would hope, if you're normally constituted. It takes a little bit of sensitivity and education to see the advertising equivalent of somebody pulling out a gun and pointing it at a loved one. And this is what this ad is. It is gun pointed at every Scandinavian person saying, you're nothing, you're replaceable. Meatballs aren't Swedish, but black people are. It really is an act of war. And it's multiplied a thousandfold because basically every advertisement has the same narrative now. You can't look at a House and Garden Channel show without seeing race mixing propaganda. It is everywhere, 24/7, in all the media now. And this is just one particularly rancid ad among millions, basically.
Yeah, there's this stone toss meme or comedy, cartoon or whatever, yeah. where they're in an ad bureau and one of the coworkers says, two gay black men kissing each other, and that's supposed to sell hamburgers. You know, it's like, are you sure this is gonna help us sell more hamburgers? And the chief says, sell more hamburgers. That's not the purpose of ads anymore.
No.
It's to change our cultural sensibilities. So and if we start accepting this and just being sort of shrug our shoulders and it's okay. Then we accept our own downfall.
One of these could be considered a fluke that you can shrug off, but when every ad is pushing the same message and none of them are selling hamburgers.
Yeah.
They're all selling race mixing and other forms of white genocide. That's the only thing that advertising really is selling these days. You have to conclude that somebody out there, somebody up there in the social hierarchy doesn't like us, and we need to start disliking them heartily back.
Yes.
Well, I want to keep monitoring the situation, as our president likes to say. We're going to continue monitoring the SAS gate situation, and we will talk about it some more if it merits monitoring. But I was really pleased at this pushback. Like I said, it's good for morale, and I'd like to see a thousand-fold imitation of this. Every time an ad like this pops up, people should be pushing back because there's no shortage of this terrible propaganda.
Yeah, ads and Hollywood films and all kinds of, everything that happens should get the same kind of reaction.
One of the things that I talked about in the introduction to my first film anthology, the first Trevor Lynch film anthology, is the reason why I write about films, about popular culture, but specifically about films. I talk about the anti-white propaganda content of films. And the reason to do that is very, very simple. People are inundated with this propaganda. We don't have the number of people, the money, the talent, the equipment necessary to create our own film industry putting out counter-propaganda. We don't have that yet.
Mm-hmm.
But if we teach people with a few blog posts and tweets and online campaigns, if we teach people how to see through the propaganda content of the mainstream media, then what happens is that every time they're exposed to that propaganda, it no longer reinforces the enemy narrative. It reinforces our narrative. Because if people suddenly see the same message being broadcast at them through all media at all hours of the day,
mm-hmm.
then they realize that there is a coordinated campaign of hatred against white people in this world, and there's a lot of money and talent behind this campaign. That's our message. That reinforces our message, not the establishment. So if we can teach people to see the same message that was very crass in this SAS campaign, in every ad, then the advertising isn't selling white genocide anymore. It's selling white nationalism. It's selling white identitarianism. It's selling our message. It's reinforcing our message over and over again. So that is a very, very powerful form of asymmetrical cultural warfare. We don't have to have the massive ad agencies, the huge budgets and things like that that these people had to reinforce our message. We just need to teach our people and more of our people to see through their message, and then we defeat them.
Right.
Well, anyway, Frody, this has been a good conversation. I think we've been going on for about an hour. You are about to embark on a couple of speaking events. Do you want to talk a bit about that just to advertise where you're going to be soon and what you're going to be doing?
Yes, I am going to speak first in Vilnius in Lithuania. And then about a week later, I am going to speak in Tallinn, Estonia. And these are youth organizations, youth groups, political groups, young people organizing this, and I really like to support them. And they are doing a magnificent job. I mean, they have very high quality people, and I'm proud to go there and talk to them. They have a different metapolitical situation in their countries. You know, at least the event in Tallinn is very sort of mainstream advertised. They advertise the venue beforehand. They don't have the usual problems that we've seen throughout Western Europe. These are very inspiring countries, and I enjoy going there. So that's going to be a lot of fun. In Vilnius, I'm going to speak about might is right, the concept of might is right from Ragnar Redbeard's book, the classic. That's going to be a lot of fun because I recently reread that book and I thought I should give a speech on it. That's going to be a lot of fun. And of course, we also have the Skanza Forum coming up on the 2nd of May in Zagreb, Croatia, with the debate between Jared Taylor and E. Michael Jones, and we have just opened up for registration. So if anyone listening to this wants to register for the event, they should email me at register@skanzaforum.com, and we'll take it from there. So it's a lot of good stuff coming up.
Yeah, I agree. And I hope you'll come back on and tell us all about your time in the Baltic states once those speeches have been given and those marches have been taken part in. They're going to be doing a couple of Independence Day marches. Their independence from the Russian Empire took place a week apart, basically, in Lithuania and Estonia. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of fun to go from Vilnius to Tallinn to take part in their national independence marches. I did that last year. It was a wonderful experience, and I think you're going to have a great time.
They're not ashamed of their nationalism.
No, not at all. No. And I think we mentioned this last time. The Baltic states are places where our Facebook friends and movement comrades are not being hunted by Antifa. They're actually in parliament.
Yeah.
So it's a place where a lot more is possible, and we hope it's a vision of things to come in the West.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. No, it's super inspiring. You know, it's just across the pond from Sweden, just across the Baltic Sea from Sweden, very close, but it's light years apart in every cultural aspect, basically, because when you land at the airport and you take a taxi, and the taxi is driven by an Estonian, the car is driven by an Estonian, you go to your hotel, and the personnel, the staff in the service desk are Estonians, the cleaning people are Estonians, maybe Russian, you know, but it's such a different experience, and it's such a nice and calm and beautiful society, and I really love going there. It's absolutely fantastic. So I'm very much looking forward to it.
Tallinn is this beautiful medieval city, very well preserved at the core. And I think Millennial Woes was there a few years ago for this event, and it was snowing at the time, and he said that it was like walking around inside of a snow globe, this sort of picturesque medieval snow globe. And it is a beautiful place. So yeah, enjoy it, and you can report back here in a few weeks' time.
I certainly will.
All right. Well, thank you so much, and we will definitely continue the conversation soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.